There was a study that was performed by some group in Europe, and I tried to track this down, and it was quoted to a bunch of different organizations, so I'm not entirely sure who really is responsible for it, but it was either somebody from a Nobel Peace Prize or somebody in Europe, in England, or somebody in that area. But they looked at the history of war throughout the history of civilization. And since 3600 BC, believe it or not, since 3600 BC, there have been only 292 years of world peace. Think about that. That means that only 5% of the time since kind of the beginning of civilization has there been a year of peace. That's pretty interesting. But they had some other interesting facts. The next fact is that during this period, there have been 14,351 wars, large and small, in which 3.64 billion people have been killed. The next interesting fact is, what is the worth? The value of the property destroyed would pay for a golden belt around the world 97.2 miles wide, 33 feet thick, 25,000 miles around the earth of gold. That's a lot of plunder that has been won in a lot of wars. And the final figure is this. Since 650 BC, there have also been, now I'm not entirely sure about this statistic because I'm not entirely what an arms race is. I think of the 60s when I think of arms races, but maybe they're talking about arm wrestling. I don't know. But anyway, 1656 arms races, of only 16 of which have not ended in war. And the thing that I want to impress upon you is that first statistic, which is since 3500 BC, which is what, about 5,600 years ago, there's only been 292 years of world peace. When you think about it, the whole idea of peace is really such a small portion of the time of this world. The world really knows war and conflict. That's kind of part of our human nature, is war and conflict. To think that only a small time in that time where we've seen peace is an amazing statistic. I think one of those years, or some of those years, may have actually occurred right after the campaign that ended today in Joshua 11. We're still continuing our sermon series through Joshua, and the last time we picked this up, which was last week, we had Joshua, he'd conquered Jericho, he'd conquered Ai, and now he's going through and he's conquering the whole entire land. In Joshua 10 and 11, basically he conquers the southern kingdom and then he conquers the northern kingdom. And God said that he would be with Joshua through all this, and God was. And they completely conquered and they annihilated the whole entire land, and they were successful in their campaign. And finally, the victorious battles are over and Joshua can now rest. But the battles were not necessarily a sure thing. Or as they would say in the Hunger Games, the odds were not necessarily in their favor. Because as they went and they battled in this area, there were three things that were working against them. First of all the people that were battling Joshua and Israel, they got smart and they said, oh my goodness, we're going to get annihilated unless we come together and form an alliance. And so they did. All the kings kind of came together and they formed an alliance against Joshua and against Israel. And it was only then that they would be able to conquer Israel, but God was on Israel's side. And Joshua was a great commander, and it didn't matter. They still annihilated everybody. But that was not the only thing. There was also the weapons of war. Believe it or not, when they came together, they realized that they had incredible weapons of war. One of the most incredible weapons of war that they had back then was the chariot. Now, you've seen pictures of chariot like in the movie Ben-Hur and all that. But a chariot was an incredible weapon of war. Because what happened is you typically had a chariot driver. He was called the charioteer. And he was driving the horse in the chariot. And then in the chariot with him was an archer. And it was kind of like guerrilla warfare. They would drive the chariot into the crowd, the archer would shoot, and then they would drive out again before the crowd would be able to react. And it was an incredibly powerful weapon of war. And later on, they learned that they need to have an archer on both flanks. And so you'd have a charioteer and you'd have an archer on both flanks. And they would go in. And I tell you, if you were up against an army that had chariots, the chances were that you would not survive. And yet Israel conquered because God was on their side. But that wasn't the only thing. There was the Anakites, the Anakim people. Now, these were the people that were giants. These were people that were very tall. They were very well known for their battle worthiness. They were trained from an early age to go into battle. They were very fearsome, and nobody liked to go up against the Anakites because these people were an incredibly strong, powerful, tall, brutal force army. And we know one of the descendants of the Anakites because he fought David. It was Goliath. That's what they were up against. And yet, even with the Anakites, Joshua and the people of God were successful. And the verse that I want to look at this morning is at the end of chapter 11. It's verse 23. Because Joshua took the entire land, just as the Lord had directed Moses, and he gave it as an inheritance to Israel according to their tribal divisions. And this is the key point. And then the land had rest from war. Then the land had rest from war. And as a matter of fact, it must have been a long time, because if you go to the end of Joshua, in Joshua 23, after a long time had passed, and the Lord had given Israel rest from all their enemies around there, Joshua, by then a very old man, summoned all Israel, their elders, leaders, judges, and officials, and said to them, I am very old. So it was for the whole lifetime of Joshua that had passed, and the Lord had given them rest from war. We all want rest from war. We don't like conflict. We don't like it in our lives. We don't like it in our nation. We don't like it in the world. We don't like conflict, and yet conflict is a part of who we are because of the fall of man. You'll remember that when we ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and it was just right after that the conflict started, and you had Cain and Abel, and Cain killed Abel. I mean, it's been a part of who we are and who we are since the beginning of time, since the 3,600 years B.C., we have been a people of conflict. So much so we've only had 292 years of peace. So how do you end the conflict? Because none of us like conflict. How do you get rid of it? Well, I can think of three ways that you can get rid of conflict. And the one way is the one that Jesus came into this earth and showed us. And that was basically just turning the other cheek. How many conflicts arise because it develops as something really tiny and minuscule, and yet it blows out of proportion because somebody just didn't take it the right way? And Jesus came into this earth and said, if your enemy is coming against you and he hits you on the right cheek, turn the left and let him hit the left. And that is one way to end conflict. You can just kind of take it and say, I'm going to move on. And that's one of the ones that Jesus says, this is a very effective way to end conflict. If you remember in the news this week, there is a certain football player that plays for the Jets. And one of the radio personalities, I guess, in New York said that the Jets should fire Tim Tebow because he's a horrible quarterback. And this came back to Tim Tebow. It was Boomer Esiason. And Tim Tebow, they said, this is what Boomer says about you. What do you have to say? You know, and he could have dug it into him. Well, he's a stupid radio announcer and all that. Well, Tim Tebow says, well, God bless him. You know, just let him go on with life. I'm not going to elevate this, but that's what you can do in conflict, and it happens in our world too. And Jesus proposes this as a very good way to end conflict, but there's a problem with it. And the problem is if you're always subservient to everybody else, it is quite possible that they could kill you, that they could take a huge advantage over you, which is what they did with Jesus, and they killed him. So while that is a great way to end conflict, it is not the only way to end conflict. There's another way to end conflict, and that is to form alliances or treaties, where a group of people get together and they say, I know that we're going to agree to disagree, and then we can get together and we can move on. And you see this happen all the time. As a matter of fact, in my family, it's a very, very large family on the Hook side. I've got six brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and all that sort of thing and grandchildren and everything. And when we get together, there's like 30 or 40 people at a house in Phoenix for these big events. And just about half of them are of one political party and half of them are the other political party. And we would get into these knockdown, drag-out discussions that were just really very painful. So we've actually formed a treaty. So when it's a Hook gathering, you are not allowed to talk about politics, period, at all. And it's the only way that some people can get through this meal. I mean, that's certainly a way that you can do that. You can form alliances and treaties with other people. That's what Joshua's enemies did. They formed an alliance and a treaty, and forming an alliances or treaty are good because it brings people together that normally wouldn't come together for a stronger force. And it's a very good way to fight conflict and to be successful. As a matter of fact, if you go into the mission field, I'm here in the United States. We have all these different denominations and nobody talks to each other. But you go into the mission field where you are a small minority of the people in that mission field. It doesn't matter. If you call Jesus Christ as your Lord, bam, you're going to be in a treaty with us and we're going to fight the enemy, which is Satan, who is working in this life. But the problem with treaties is that you do have to give up a little bit of yourself. You aren't successful. You aren't winning. And the treaties can be tenuous. Treaties change over time. Relationships change. You might be in a treaty with two different groups, and all of a sudden they start fighting, and then what do? Treaties are not necessarily the way to end conflict. There's another way to end conflict, and it's not a pretty way, and it costs a lot. But the other way to end conflict is through brute force to annihilate the enemy. And that's what Joshua did. He came into this area under God's direction, under God's command, and he basically annihilated the whole entire enemy. There is no conflict when the enemy's gone. But there is a huge price to pay at that point, and that is the 3.63 billion lives that have been lost in the conflict since 3600 BC. None of these are necessarily a great way to end the conflict, but none of us want conflict. But folks, we live in a sinful world. We're always going to have conflict. As long as there's two people alive and those two people are going to interact with each other, there's going to be conflict. And there's no way that the conflict will ever, ever end until the end. And then the conflict will end. But see, there's a conflict between us and God. Because we are sinful people that ate of the apple that brought original sin into our lives, that we are conflicted people, that we're always in war and always fighting each other. Well, God doesn't like that. And God, by every right, the most powerful person, the most powerful being who created the earth, should annihilate us. I don't want this conflict. I'm going to get rid of them. And he almost did. Remember with Noah? Almost got rid of us. But instead, he said, no, I got a better idea. And so he sent his son Jesus into the world, not to annihilate us, not to make a treaty with us, but to humble himself before us, to take the pain and the punishment upon himself. And in so doing, we are no longer in conflict with God. When we die, we will live with him forever in a world without conflict. And folks, that's the only time that'll ever happen. You know, here in the United States, we have not seen many wars on our soil. There's been the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, all those wars. The Civil War, that's right, the Civil War. I guess you could add Hawaii because that was kind of on our soil. But other than that, we have not seen a lot of conflict on our soil. And it's not because, we're so wonderful people. We're as sinful as the rest of the world, but we are a very powerful nation. And we are a powerful nation that the world fears us. And we go into the world with very, very much power. And that's why we have peace. And sometimes we forget that the peace that we have was purchased through some of those 3.63 billion lives of people who are putting their life on the line. And we should be grateful for that. But we shouldn't be deluded that conflict is going to end anytime soon. Because as long as you've got two people living together in the same space, there's always going to be conflict. And there will always be conflict in this world. Plato said it best. He said, only the dead will know, have seen the end of war. And the truth is, the only time we will see the end of war is then when we pass from this life into the next, and we are with God forever, and the plowshares will be beaten down, the swords will be beaten down in the plowshares, the lion will lie down on the lamb, and we will be in a world without conflict with God forever. And that's a great thing. In Jesus' name.